What up? This is Caroline with the CWC podcast, where we believe that life without your favorite foods is not worth living. I'm going to be talking a lot about my journey to food freedom, and of course, I will always keep it real by sharing the good, the bad, and of course, the ugly.
I'm like so afraid now that it's going to like unhook in the middle of me recording and I'm going to lose my audio again. Me and my sister have this like dual complaint about our hair because our dad has like 857 cowlicks. So we got the same hair and like, we just can't do anything with our hair, like nothing. And it's like shit, like you can, there, like that's a cowlick that's just poking out. And I washed my hair I washed my hair two nights ago and just like, I don't ever blow dry it unless I'm like going somewhere, which is never. So I just let it air dry and slept on it. Well, when I slept on it, so then this right here was like poofing up in the back. So I had to like try to bobby pin it and it didn't work. The bobby pin is not holding. And we are always like, see, we're always joking about like, don't you wish you had like, I see these women with like beautiful, like big curly hair that just like, it's just pretty. And like ours won't do shit. It's flat as fuck. And we have all these cowlicks. So there's like all these random fucking weird spots on our head. It's quite annoying. Like if you have really pretty, like thick hair that just does like will allow to be styled, be grateful. And bless Kyler, he's the same way. I swear to God, I turned my do not disturb on. Why am I getting notifications? Kyler is the same way. Bless his heart. He wanted to do the perm because that's like what's in. So he wanted it like buzzed on the side and he wanted the top permed. And it just didn't work. And I was like, Kyler, you're not like, you don't have regular hair. I'm sorry, but you just don't. Like, your hair's not going to do things that, like, and even when, he wants to grow it out long again now, which is fine. Even long, like, it doesn't just, like, style. I can't explain it. It's just, like, hangs. Like, I remember I cut my hair off a long time ago. Like, it was after watching Sweet Home Alabama with Reese Witherspoon, and I was like, oh my God, her hair is so fucking cute. Like, I want my hair to look like that. And I was in my room, and I grabbed my hair and just chopped it, like, to here. I don't even think I have photos from this time period, but it was so bad. It was so bad, and it just looked awful. And so from that point on, like, I've just had long hair. Like, I'm not someone who can pull off short hair. I was even, like, concerned about being able to pull that off. And I actually really like it. And the thing I like most, I'm not going to do it because then I'll have to refix my hair. But, like, I was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do if I want to grow this back out? Like, it's going to look really fucking weird when it gets, like, that long. But I purposely did it over here so that I could flip this part over and just do, like, a middle part. And when it's growing out, I'll just have this covering it and we're all good. So now that I've spent 4 minutes talking about my hair, we're going to get started. One more time, let me double check and make sure the audio is working. Okay. I'm sorry. I just don't want to lose my audio again. That was awful. It's not that the end of the world, but it sounds so much better using a professional microphone. Okay. So welcome back to the CWC podcast today. Didn't record an episode last week because it was a holiday week. And honestly, like, I feel like I have no bearings right now as it is with my kids being home. It's the puppies. And the puppies. So it's really hard to like fully focus, if that makes sense. Like working from home and having the kids here and having these, the puppies aren't that big of a deal, but like just not having like this was like my time and like my space. And like, I would come home when they were at school and just do my thing. And I would work and film the podcast. It's different now because like they're in the house with me. So I went upstairs before I came down here to film. And I was like, hey, Bryn was still asleep. She'll probably be asleep till like, she can sleep till noon pretty much. She's like me. So I'm not terribly worried about her, but I told Kyler, cause he was just waking up, and I was like, I'm getting ready to film. Like, give me like 1 hour, maybe a little bit longer. So it's just like that constant, call it like the running mental load. And I'm going to talk about that. That's like a whole point that I want to go off on, not go off on, but you know what I mean? Elaborate on. So, I was trying to think of what to title today's episode, and I think I'm going to title it Under Pressure, only because that's a Queen song and it's kind of what I'm talking about specifically with women. And I don't want to, negate the fact that men are also under pressure, but I'm not a man. I can only talk from being a woman. So I'm going to talk about my own experience like I always do. And I'm also going to integrate conversations that I have with clients and friends who also consequently go through the exact same struggles. So, it's really hot in here today. I normally don't complain about it being hot. It's fucking hot in here. So yesterday I basically posted, I was like, what do you guys want me to talk about? Diet, fitness stuff. No one voted for that. Like, yeah, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 votes. And then like everyone voted. It was literally like neck and neck to talk about marriage, sex, communication, intimacy, and then family, farm stuff, da da da. So I was like, you know what? I can talk about all of those things collectively in one episode. And then my friend Ashley was like, please talk about your experience with postpartum depression, because she has experienced that and she now has 2 daughters, and she's kind of in, they're the little babies. And so she's going through like the thick of it. And she was like, please talk about just how, like, no one talks about having postpartum depression when most women go through it. And if they don't go through it, they go through some sort of like a crazy hormonal imbalance after having kids. Like, it's just natural. And I find it really odd now that it's being talked about more and we're like, women are sharing their experiences and their struggles. It's alarming to me that women are just sent home with basically no care. Like, I mean, they will clear you physically, but like no one checks on you emotionally or mentally during that time. And for me personally, it was both times the hardest, one of the hardest points in my life. Because even though you have help, if you do have help, like, you still just feel alone. You feel very alone with your thoughts, because it's like everyone on the outside has the ability to reason and to, I don't want to say go on living their normal lives, but kind of. And like, as like the mom, and if you're breastfeeding, like, you're that baby's main source of food. Like, you kind of have to be the one that is always on no matter what. And it's exhausting. So, I'm going to talk about that too. But I want to go over my notes, cause I spent a really long time making notes this time. And essentially, I want to start it out. I tried to even like put it in chronological order so that I would not get fucking sidetracked. But I typed, being boxed in by society is torturing us daily, because most people, men and women, have unrealistic expectations of marriage, being a parent. And then like our parents, like our relationship with our parents. And I'm speaking in terms of millennials, again, because this is just my own experience and I only know what to speak from when it comes to this type of stuff. So I talk about this in my line of work. I talk about it with my clients about don't box yourself in with thinking in terms of like diet. Like the second you start boxing yourself in with like, okay, I can't have fried food. I can't have this. I can't have caffeine. I have to stop drinking. I have to do this. Like you've boxed yourself in to this way of living that 9 times out of 10 is unsustainable. It's miserable. And you have to devote so much willpower to follow these rules. And if you make one mistake, it's you attack yourself and you're like, why can't I do anything? Why don't I understand why I can't just stick with this? And the really weird thing to me is when we're doing these things, these unrealistic diets that aren't sustainable, that we fucking hate, and we're like putting ourselves in this cycle of misery, we're doing it for an end goal that we may not even want. Like we may not even want the end goal that we're working for. We just think we do because society has boxed us in. And it to this little thing of like, well, you need to look like this, and like thin is in, and being strong and fit is in. And what blows my mind is these body types that women are supposed to adhere to or strive to look like. When I was younger, it was thin. It was like skinny as fuck. I mean, it was like literally gaunt, like you're not eating. So a lot, me and my friends like just didn't eat. Like we would literally starve. That's what we would do to go on a diet. We'd starve. We just wouldn't eat. And then 5 or 6 years ago when I started my transformation, it shifted to like strong is the new skinny, toned. I want to be toned. I want to have an ass. I want to look buff. I want to have shoulder caps. I want to have an, like, and when I tell you that body type is 1 trillion times more unsustainable than any other body type I know, believe me. And I got so caught up in that, that it, like, I did steroids. I was like shooting myself up with steroids because I wasn't big enough. I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't toned enough. And like now looking back, I'm like, what were you thinking? You were huge. It's crazy because in that moment, like I was like, I'm not big enough. Like when I was working out in the gym and I would get like a pump going, I was like, yes, this is what I like. But as soon as I left the gym, like the pump goes down and you feel like you look flat. And so, you know, steroids is something that I never thought I would do. I was the kid in high school that did not do any drugs, none. Like because I knew I would not be able to handle it. I literally just drank. I smoked weed a little bit here and there. I just never got like, it never really worked for me, if that makes sense. I just never got like the same feeling that others did. And like, while all of my fucking friends were doing ecstasy and coke, like I never did any of that ever. And it's kind of the same thing with, I don't know. I just like always, steroids was always like on that level. I was like, I will never do that. It's not even an option. Like I never even thought about it. And what's funny is like, there was no premeditated, like, I think I'm going to do this. I literally just one day was like, I think I'm going to start doing steroids. And again, it is boxing in what is in. Strong as the new skinny. You want to be buff. You want to be everyone around you is like at the gym now lifting weights and like looking up to people like Hattie Boydell on Instagram and wanting the shoulder caps and wanting this. Well, let me just tell you how hard it is to put on muscle for 99% of women. I'm sure that there's a very small percentage that can like put on muscle super easily, but it's not a lot, you guys. Like, this is where I just want you guys to know the reality of maybe a goal that you're setting. Like, because I know that I still like that look of being toned, but I don't like it enough to do the work. And that may change, it may not. Right now, I don't have the capacity, nor do I even care that I don't have the capacity. But it's a lot of work. I'm not gonna lie, I can't tell you how many times during that period when I was working out, training heavy 5 to 7 days a week, the amount of food I was eating every 3 hours on the dot, I was eating chicken and rice. I would not go past the 3 hour mark. I would think to myself, God, starving would be so much easier than this. Like if I just didn't eat, this would be so, that would be so much easier. This is so much work. Not to mention, it's a lot of money. And it's not just even the workouts, it's like the cooking and the prepping and all of that shit. It was so emotionally draining. And I want you guys to know how much work goes in, because I don't think that's talked about enough. Like, and a lot of women are taking shortcuts. I've done videos on this and I'm not going to go off into like a segment on this, but like a lot of women are using Anavar and performance enhancing drugs and they're not saying anything. They're not telling you. So that's basically my big beef with it is like, use whatever you want, but you, if you're online, you have a social media presence, I don't care if you have 100 followers or 100 million, you, in my opinion, I think that everybody who is doing something like that, you have a responsibility to your following, I don't care how big or small it is, to tell them what you're doing to achieve that body type, because if you're not being honest with them, you are just perpetuating such a sick and twisted way of disordered eating and disordered body image issues for people who are watching you. So, I'm gonna start back here with, I wrote breast implants, buying shit, bags, purses, wearing types of clothes, doing things you don't want to do. Sex and the feeling that you need to be like performative during sex. I'm going to talk about all of this right now, like kind of like, I'll talk about the steroids too. Okay. So everything I just mentioned was something that I did that like wasn't me at one point in my life. Got my breast implants when I was 23 or 24, and no one made me do it, but I felt like I needed it because growing up, I was made fun of for not having boobs. I was called mosquito bites. I was called all the names in the book by all the boys. I was made fun of. And that shit, you act like it doesn't bother you, but it does. And I envied all of my friends who had boobs. I had nothing. I was like a double A. And so my early 20s, it was a no-brainer. Like, that's what I wanted to do. Obviously, hindsight's 20/20. If I could go back, I would 100% not do them. Same exact conversation regarding the steroids. If I could go back and undo a couple of things, those are two things I wouldn't do again, including the Anavar. I get messages daily now because of TikTok. Girls will come across a video that I'm talking about the Anavar and they'll message me and be like, hey, you know, I'm really thinking of trying it, or I'm already on it. Why do you say don't do it? And I can't say this enough. I feel like my message is not clear enough. Like, this goes for the breast implants. This goes for any type of performance enhancing drug. Don't do it. It's not worth it. Trust me. I'm not just saying that because like, oh, I did it and now I'm done doing it, so I'm gonna tell everyone not to do it. It's not about that. They literally ruined my life. Like, having breast implants ruined my health. I believe that the steroid usage kicked off my breast implant illness. So I think it's like a coupling of the two, but between all of those things, they caused issues that I continue to deal with, if that makes sense. Having breast implant illness is similar to having an autoimmune disorder, in my opinion. And I feel like occasionally I will feel like I have a flare up and where I just get super tired and worn down and there's like no explanation why. I just have to sleep and I'm just not the same. Like, I'm not the same. When I was working out hardcore in the beginning of my transformation, I was one of those people that I would just work out and it made me feel great. And I went back to the gym every day because of that. And I've not been the same. And I know, like, I'm older. I get that. Age is probably playing a little bit of a role, but doing those things to my body altered my body's natural functions or chemistry, whatever you want to call it. And I did them because I was trying to fit myself into an image that I thought people wanted out of me. I wanted to look better. I thought boobs would make me prettier. I thought it would make me look more feminine and sexy and appealing. And the steroid usage and the Anavar usage was just like this weird, bizarre, like, I gotta be better. I gotta be better. I gotta be better. Like, I'm in this position where I've worked really hard on my body. Now I want to be big. I want to be the best. I want to be the strongest. I want to be this. I want to be that. And all the while, I was just constantly comparing myself to other people, other women online, like these just unrealistic expectations. And I paid the price, ultimately. Like, I paid the price. And, you know, after doing the steroids and it sent me into the breast implant illness, I have so much to say. I'm trying to talk super fast. I was so sick. So fucking sick for so long. I literally thought I was dying. And I've done this whole thing, but like, explanting was, after I explanted, I felt like I got my life back. I felt like a person again, if that makes any sense. I felt like a shell of a human when I was struggling. And I just felt like I had myself back. And so I was just talking like 5 days ago to a younger girl at the gym that Josh works out at. And she was like, I really kind of want to get breast implants, but like, I've watched enough of your videos that it makes me scared. I'm like, don't do it. Please don't do it. Like, it's not worth it. I promise. Like, even if you were going to be one of those people that, like, I'm sure there's women who have them who never experience a symptom. They don't have to have an explant. They're fine. They don't get breast implant illness. But you don't know that that's going to be you. So like, why would you risk that? Believe me, it's not worth it. So anyone watching who is contemplating doing anything like that, don't do it. Bags and purses. I always talk about this because I went through a long phase of trying to fit in by like buying Coach bags and like wearing certain things that I truly didn't like, or things that made me uncomfortable, but I just wore them because I thought it was like what I was supposed to wear. All my friends were wearing it and they liked it. And I was trying to kind of fit in. And I feel like I masked who I really was the first 35 years of my life. Maybe not 35, 30, no, 34. 3 years. I feel like I literally was just wearing a mask of who I wanted people to think that I was. I didn't do things I really wanted to do. I did things because other people wanted me to do them that I hated. I bought shit I did not want to fucking wear or have. And a lot of the times I was drunk, because in order to like exist around a large group of people all the time when I was younger, I would have to be like under the influence. Like, I had to be kind of like numb to everything just to fit in, just to be someone at the party. Like, I couldn't, not drinking for me growing up was not an option. It just wasn't. Like, it was, I couldn't be in like a setting with friends or people without being drunk. And that was a problem because I have a very addictive personality. But I wasn't really being myself. And I feel like when I got drunk, I could kind of let a little bit of myself out, but it would still be like polished, if that makes any sense. Like, it wasn't the real me, but it was like me who I wanted to be. Like, I would turn into like a fun version of myself and be carefree. That's the best word I can think to describe it. Like, I would let down my guard and I was able to be like the fun part of Caroline that I thought everybody wanted me to be. And that was all fine and good for a while for people I was going out and partying with. They got to see like the fun part of Caroline and the party girl. And they were like, oh my God, Caroline is so much fun when she goes out and drinks. And then my sister and my husband would get like evil Caroline later on that night. And they would be like, no, we don't want Caroline to drink. And so it became this thing where Josh and Emily were trying to like keep me from drinking. And then all my friends would be like, what are you doing? Like, let her have fun. And I'd be like, yeah, let me have fun. Full while knowing that like they were going to catch the brunt of my behavior at the end of the night when I demanded to go to Taco Bell at 2 o'clock in the morning and like would not take no for an answer. Like literally almost broke my finger one night because I was like grabbing my car keys at 2 a.m. like telling Josh to go fuck himself. I was going to go to Taco Bell. And he was like, no, you're not. And he got up to shut the door. My hand was in the door and he didn't see it. And he slammed the door. He was like, you're not going anywhere. You're not driving anywhere. And my finger, and that was like a whole fucking 3-hour ordeal. And, but like stuff like that used to happen all the time. And it, I was just trying, I just always felt so much pressure to be a certain way, but it was never okay to, like being myself was never an option, like who I really was. And I'm sure a lot of people will be able to relate to that, especially growing. Like, I feel like that's not like a unique story. I think a lot of people go through that exact same fucking experience when they're going through middle school and high school and even college. But all of those things just that I did made everything worse because I feel like they all pushed me further and further and further away from like who I really was. And now it's crazy to me that I ever did any of those things. It's crazy to me that I just didn't say, I don't want to do this, or I don't like this, or doing things that I truly enjoy and not making up something else. Like, and I want to talk a little bit about like the performative or the need to have performative sex as a woman. And I think that this, I'm going to go into like a little thing about this because I feel like it's not talked about enough. I still am not really going as deep as I could. Maybe I'll do that today. Who knows? But when I say performative sex, I mean like we watch porn and it's extremely, and I'm talking we, I mean like collectively, like who, if you've watched porn, you know it is not, a lot of it is not realistic. I would say the bulk of it is not realistic, right? Like they're being filmed, like it's not realistic. Some of them are, you can find pockets that are, but when women, and I'm speaking again for me, like when I used to watch it, I was just like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. Like you, it's like a subconscious thing that you're like in taking this information and you're not even thinking about it, but it's telling your brain, this is what I need to do. I need to act like that. I need to scream like that. I need to do my position like that. Like, because I need to make sure that I'm like pleasing him and making sure that he is like having the best time ever, regardless of the time I'm having. And that just like for a long time was my narrative. I've been married for 23 years and we met when we were 17. Children. Hang on. I don't want to get into this one part if my kids are going to like come downstairs and get cereal because I don't want them hearing this. Hang on. So, oh my God, these fucking notifications. I swear I put my phone on Do Not Disturb and I don't know why I'm getting all these notifications. And that piece of hair is driving me fucking crazy. God. Okay. So if you, okay. When I'll say this, like at the beginning of our relationship when we were 17, I'm not going to lie, it was kind of based around sex. Like it was, but it wasn't. Like there was an attraction there. There was, I like this person. There was like, there was a chase. There was like a whole thing. You know, it was exciting. We were young. But essentially it started, like we weren't the couple that was like, we're best friends, we're soulmates. And then we like got married and like became into, like I started out kind of as like a booty call, I'm not gonna lie. And I just had instantly felt a connection during sex that I had not had previously. And I obviously can't speak anything for Josh in this. This is only my own experience, but the sex was always amazing. I never, there was just never a complaint. Like that was never an issue. We never really had issues in our relationship until we started having kids and combined finances. Like that's like how every fucking relationship goes. But over the years, you know, there've been ups and downs. And I think every marriage can say that. I've gone through a lot of mental health stuff, and I've gone through depression, and I've gone through times where I didn't want it or need it like at all. And it was like the last thing on my mind. And this was even before we had kids. So like, I think like right after we got married, I went through a terrible slump where I didn't even know. I honestly, still looking back, I'm like, was it like a hormonal? I think it was the antidepressants I was on. That's gotta be what it is. Yeah. Cause I was on Prozac for a while and it fucked me. Like it made me like a shell of a human, and I wanted, like, I just didn't care about anything. It's like, I went to get on it because I was struggling with anxiety and depression. And then I got on it and I was like, I'd rather be fucking crazy and have like depression and feel things and feel depressed than feel nothing. And it affected, you know, a lot of aspects of my life, including our sex life. And so it's difficult when you genuinely don't want to, and it like it's the last thing on your mind, because let's just be real, like it's a huge part. Before I go into like this, because I feel like, again, I think our brains are so conditioned by the patriarchal society that we live in, because I literally was just about to say sex is really important for men. It's also really important for women. But because of the way that it's portrayed and the way that I was brought up in the Baptist church, I just had this understanding that I was only supposed to make sure that the man was happy, that they were pleased with everything, and I wanted to be the sexiest, every angle had to be perfect. I remember having sex and like just constantly thinking about my stomach the entire fucking time, to where I was not even like aware of what I was doing, because I was like, oh my God, my stomach is like hanging down and it's like gonna touch his stomach, and oh my God, like that went on for so long, and that can really fuck with you, and sex becomes not enjoyable because you're thinking about your body. You're obsessing about your body. It was around this time that I was putting on weight because I was on antidepressants, which was also affecting my sex drive. And so I thought I had to do this certain thing to make sure, like, I kept him happy and I kept him here. And I did, like, I just always was under the assumption, and this is going to sound so sexist, and it is, but this was like, this is a real thing, and how I feel like we were brought up. It was like, well, if you don't give it to him, he's going to find it somewhere else. And now I'm like, that is so fucked up that like, that's what I believed as a teenager and like in my early 20s. And I will say that the frequency of our sexual relationship has been one of the hardest parts of our marriage over the years, because obviously once you have kids and like I said, when you have kids and you combine the finances, you're living together, if you're going through something, like we've gone through so many like difficult times as a couple, but I feel like we've come out of each of those stronger because, like, honestly, looking back, I'm like, how did we make it through that? And at the end of the day, every time I think to just say, like, it's, we communicate really well. In my opinion, I think that's the main thing that has kept us not only together, but like getting closer and closer and closer, like as the years go on. It's just literally having an open line of communication. And I want to also say, having these types of conversations surrounding sex are so, they need to be normalized, and they're still not. Every time I talk about this, I still get nervous. Like, I don't get nervous talking about all this other shit, but like when I start talking about this, I get nervous. I don't know why. I mean, I do know why. But so I would say, even just in the past couple of years, something hit me a couple years ago, and this was after having John Romanello on my podcast twice. I follow him, you know, I started following him years ago, and then we started chatting and becoming friends, and he came on the CWC podcast, and he is amazing at encouraging people to strip away the shame surrounding sex. And he talks about it so openly that, like, at first, when you start following him, you're like, what is he talking? Like, it can really, like, send you, like, your brain almost like explodes, because he'll talk about stuff that no one talks about, but he'll talk about it just so matter of fact, like this is the way it is, and this is normal to talk about this, and it's okay, and it's safe. And so I started just really like paying attention to the conversations he was having, and he does Q&As on his story all the time. And it wasn't until I started talking to him and having him on the show and really starting to understand that I have a real problem communicating what I want, specifically sexually. And once I realized that, I was like, okay, but now, and you know, Josh is the type that he's like, just tell me. Like, I want to know, like nothing you could say could make me think weird. Like, just tell me, give me all the information. But there was like a mental block. And there's a little bit of it that is still there. And I know that, you know, I always say nothing is overnight. You can't just snap your fingers and have everything change overnight. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that with diets or, you know, relationships or conversations. You have to like kind of chip away at it. And I feel like the past 2.5-3 years, I've been slowly like chipping away at the shame that I feel surrounding communication about sex. And just, I would say, like in the past 1.5 years, it has been so amazing being able to finally, like, it took one time, like just say something, say what I want or say what I don't like. And once I would say it, it was like all that fear went away, and it was accepted, and it was heard. And then it was like, oh, well, okay, well then we can work on this. And then if you like this, let's try this. If you don't like that, why don't you just say it? But I'm telling you, and maybe I'm the only one, I don't know. Wait for someone else to chime in so that I don't feel like a weirdo. But like, there were so many times where like we would be doing something and it would hurt, and I literally wouldn't even say anything. Like I would just be quiet. Like I was like a mute. And it's not like that anymore. And it's taken, like I said, this is year 23 that we've been married, but I have actively been working on communicating better, and it's been so different. Like I can't even describe it. And honestly, like I'm not going to lie, the O-shot, I talked about this when I got it, and I've been kind of slowly giving updates. Like I didn't even know what it was a month ago. And when I went in to get my hormones tested, Shannon was like, oh, you know, what are you having problems with? Because she always asks, like, what are you struggling with low energy? Are you struggling with anything? And I was like, well, because one of the questions on her thing is like, do you have difficulty reaching orgasm? And I was like, yes. And I was like, I just thought it was like an age thing. Like, I've never had that problem, but now it's like a problem. And she was like, do you want to do the O shot? And I was like, I don't even know what that is. Oh my God. So basically, like, they draw your blood and then they spin it. It's basically PRP, protein rich plasma or some shit like that. I can't remember the acronym. But then they inject your spun blood into your clit and they inject it in up inside, like in your vaginal wall. I had that done 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, and it has been insane. And I everything I've read has said that like it can take up to 3 months for you to notice like full benefits from it. And I'm like, I'm already noticing, like I've noticed massive increased lubrication. So like if you're someone who is struggling, I have friends who are like, I feel like I dry out like so fast. Like, has it helped with that? And I'm like, yeah, because like I never really had that problem. Like occasionally I would, but that was like if we were having sex for like 2 hours or an hour and a half, then yes, like I would. But now it is like, it's like a fucking water park. Like, not to be gross, but it is like, that has been the biggest difference that I've noticed, other than like the sensitivity. And meaning, like, you know how like you'll have sex and like it's great and it feels good, but then like you get the climax and you're like, oh man, this is like the best part. It's like you have like right before, that's like what it feels like the whole time. It feels like you're on like the cusp of one the entire time. It's crazy. And I honestly wasn't expecting that. I was expecting the increased lubrication. And I don't know if it's just like I don't know. I feel like it's honestly helped with like, just like my sex drive in general. I don't know if that's a benefit. I don't know if that's even related to that, but maybe it's a placebo effect, but I feel like that's made a huge difference as well. I would highly recommend it. It is expensive, but it's worth it. And everything I've read says it can last up to 18 months. Shannon did say like you, depending on your body, it's kind of like Botox, like how fast do you metabolize it? You can do it once every 6 months, maybe once every year. But I'm like, that is so fucking doable once a year. Like, sign me up. Even if I did it once every 6 months, I still think that that's very doable. So, I've had amazing results from the O-Shot and I like can't recommend it highly enough. So moving on from that, but I want to continue opening up this conversation about sex and normalizing talking about it and normalize talking about women's pleasure. And sex is very, very important to women too, not just men. And what's really interesting is we box ourselves in by thinking we need to be performative because we think that's what the guy wants. When in all reality, that's not what they want. Like, they want you to be like, this is what I really like. This is what I don't like. Let's try this. Like, maybe don't do that. Or, you know what I mean? Like, most men, I don't feel like they like that like fake, weird porn star vibe. Like, I think they are wanting more of like a real, like they want you to tell them what you want and what feels good and not really think that you need to put on a show, I guess, if that makes sense. So, I don't know, maybe that helps, maybe it doesn't. So I'm going to move off of this subject and into a different one about, let's see. Where can I put that in? I fucking skipped over something. I wrote down not wearing shorts because of cellulite, which kind of just goes into what I was talking about with everything else. Like, because there was so long I would not wear shorts after competing. I like this, the second I saw like a dimple of cellulite return on my legs, which was pretty fast, I was like, oh my God, I can't wear shorts unless I get my legs back. And I spent like a good solid 2 years after competing, like trying to hang on to that. And that was part of the reason I did steroids, because I was like, oh, maybe this will help. And I'm not going to lie, like when I did the steroids, yeah, like it made a huge difference in my musculature. But like the second I stopped taking them, like it's not, I feel like some of those benefits that I got during it, I retained a couple of them, but not enough, like not enough to ever recommend someone else to do it, like at all. But that was like part of the thing. I like would not wear shorts for a long time after that because I was so embarrassed about my legs. And I don't know what it was. I think it was two summers ago. And I was really at that point starting to kind of soften up more and more because over the past couple of years, I've just been working out so sporadically. Like it's just kind of naturally just is what it is. And I wanted so bad to wear like my bike shorts to the gym one day. And I was like, just fucking wear them. Like I almost just got so tired of like being so concerned about what my legs looked like that I was like, just fuck. Like if you can just wear them once, it's like the communication, like just, it takes one time. It literally takes one fucking instance for you to do something or try something and see, like it erases that fear. Like the fear that you have can get so built up that once you finally just do something that you were so afraid of and see that it wasn't that scary, then everything else just kind of falls away. Like, and that's what happened. I went to the gym one day in my little bike shorts and I was working out. And like, yes, there were moments where I would look in the mirror and be like, ooh, I don't really like that angle. But I just kind of was like, I don't care. Like the quicker you can like shove that thought away, the better. Because then like, if I'm thinking about it in terms of like, this was just a couple years ago that I just said, fuck it and started wearing shorts no matter what my legs look like. Now I don't give a fuck. I just don't care. And it's pretty fucking freeing because there are so many women still who won't wear shorts because of the way their legs look. And I just want to encourage you, if you are one of those women, like put them on today and like go outside or go to the grocery store, go to the gym. Put the bike shorts on and fucking wear them. Who cares? 99% of the people in the gym are looking at themselves in the mirror, if that helps you. Like, they're not like standing across the gym being like, oh my God, look at her legs in those shorts. I promise you they are not. And most men and women are not going to look at you and be like, oh my God, I can't believe she's wearing shorts. That's not a thought that we think people have those thoughts. Like that's our own shit going through our head of like, oh my God, this person is going to think I'm huge or my legs are big or I have this much cellulite. Like people don't think like that. They just don't. I mean, the way that we speak to ourselves versus the way we talk to our friends, like just look at that. Like the things we say and think about ourselves, we would never say that to a friend of ours or even a random girl at the gym for that matter. We would never ever say something the way we talk to ourselves to someone else. So remember that too. Okay. Now I want to talk about, oh my God. Okay. Let's see. I want to talk about just the mental load of women and mothers. Even if you're not a mother, you're still fitting in the woman category. And just like, again, I want to continue focusing on the pressure almost that we don't know is there. Like it's just kind of like a running pressure that goes on in the back of our minds regarding our bodies, our life, the way people view our life. Now that we have social media, it's made it a million times worse, I think, because I just feel like a lot of people want to put out an image that they want people to perceive them as. And I think that's a normal thing for everyone. I really do. I lived, like I said, the first 34 years of my life doing that very thing. I wanted people to think of me a certain way. I wanted people to see me the way I wanted them to see me. And I wouldn't allow them to see the true me. So I did a bunch of shit that I didn't fucking like. And, you know, I did steroids and I got breast implants. I did all of those things because I wanted to be perceived a certain way. And I wanted to be thought of like, oh, wow, this and that. And it's exhausting when you spend that much effort trying to hide like who you really are, what you really like, what do you really feel comfortable in or with, you know, in terms, like, what, like, a lot of us don't even know what we enjoy doing because we just do things that we think others want us to do and what's socially acceptable. And that's a really good way to be completely miserable all the time. And I think that is what I was really dealing with before when it led me to drinking and just not really knowing that there was like another way to be. And I will say that our generation, I feel like we were the last generation as millennials to kind of be forced down the chute of this is just how you live your life. You get married, you have kids. This is just what you do. And hang on. I haven't been making notes like a fucking idiot and now I'm losing my place. The way I see things is when I look at like our grandparents, for instance. Our grandparents, the women, my grandma, they stayed home. They took care of the house. They were homemakers. They weren't working. The grandfathers, the men went to work. That was just the way it was. And I feel like overall, that generation had more children and they didn't, I don't know how I want to word this. I feel like our parents have so much trauma that, not across the board, please God, don't come after me. I'm talking about this in number one, my own experience and my experience of talking to hundreds, if not more than that, other women in the form of a client or a friendship or whatever. And this is what I have seen literally across the board. Our parents were deeply traumatized. I don't think that the boomers really even wanted children. I just, not all of them, I don't think. I don't think they were mentally prepared, but it was just what you do, right? It's just what you do. You get married and you have kids. And so, you know, my mom worked too. Like, it wasn't just my dad going to work. Like, my mom also worked a full-time job. And my mom has her own health struggles, mental health struggles, and so does my dad. My dad talked about my dad having bipolar disorder and he has PTSD from being in Vietnam. Like, there's a lot of shit going on there. And because of those things, my childhood was very traumatic and I was never even like okay admitting that until I sat down in therapy for the first time a couple years ago and my therapist was like, tell me about your childhood. And I just started talking about it and she was like, yeah, you're really waxing like it was like wonderful, but like you had a really like scary and traumatic childhood. And I was like, no, I didn't. And she was like, you actually did. And it's crazy because there's still a lot of my childhood I genuinely don't remember. I'm talking blocks of my life that like no recollection, none. My sister will say something and I'm like, when did this happen? And she's like, you were in like 11th grade. You don't, I mean, like you were gone all the time getting drunk and partying and sleeping in your car. So of course you don't remember what was going on. But I, trying to link it in with like just feeling like constant pressure, like from being a woman. Talked about the body stuff, talked about that. Like growing up, I felt, now I know this, I didn't know it until I started therapy. I felt like I had to be constantly controlling, watching out for, and manipulating others' emotions. And I got really good at doing that. I'm still really good at doing that. Not manipulating so much, but like I can gauge a room. If I walk into a room, I can gauge the whole room, everyone in there. And for a long time, I was like, I'm an empath. I have this gift. And then it was like, no, you are traumatized. And like, that was how you had to be growing up. Like you constantly had to gauge the emotions of your parents to know like what's the day going to be like? I mean, me and my sister literally had a running joke of like, is dad going to wake up on the good side of the bed today, or is he going to wake up on the bad side? Like, and you would know like the second he would walk into the kitchen, like if it was going to be a bad day. And I immediately just like, so many days I just wanted to leave. Like, and so once I got my driver's license, like I would just leave. I would literally run out the front door and get in my car and drive anywhere. And so it was just so hard. And I never even knew how hard it was until like 5 years ago. Because I had just told myself this version of it, you know, you don't live with any other people growing up. You live with your family. So you think that's the way you're supposed to live. You think you're normal. And then you start talking to other people and you're like, and then you see other families and you're like, oh, well, that's weird that they're not like, And what I find now as like a parent, again, us millennials were kind of the last generation that were shoved down like the chute of capitalism of like, yeah, you just get married and have kids. That's just what you do. I never, ever, ever truly understood that I had a choice. I'm not just making that up. I was like, yeah, I just will start having babies one day. It's wild to me now that I look back on 20-year-old Caroline and that was like a process in my brain of like, yeah, I'll have kids. We'll have kids one day. We'll have kids. That's next after we get married. Like we were just so conditioned to like think that's what you do. That's what everybody does. Like you got to keep the cog running somehow. So like we want everybody to have children. And now it's so interesting because I'm talking to my own kids about children and like Bryn is like, I don't want kids at all. Ever. She's 9. Kyler is like, I don't know that I do, but I might. Like, I might change my mind when I get older, but right now I don't know. Like, he's still very much like, he probably will. But like, I want to just continuously emphasize to both of them that like, you have a choice. If you don't want to, you don't have to. I don't care if all of your friends are having kids. Like, if you don't want them, you don't have to have them. And I think that that's what needs to be the conversation. And it just hasn't been until us. And I really, like, I don't want to say that I hate putting millennials on a pedestal, but God damn it, I'm going to fucking do it because I feel like we deserve to be on a pedestal. I really do. And I say that because our parents didn't know any better, whatever. It was just what they did. It was what their parents did. They had, you know, everybody has trauma. We all do. But like their generation just like never fucking dealt with it. It was always pick up the rug, sweep it under. We don't talk about it. And if you had trauma as their child, don't you fucking dare talk about it. Don't you fucking dare talk about it to anybody. And if you talk about it to me and want to be honest with me about it, like I'm just going to deflect. Like, I don't know. That didn't happen. And so it's really difficult. I haven't really gone into this depth yet, but it's a part of my life. So I feel like it has to eventually come out. And I'm sorry, but this is a conversation I have all the time with all my friends who are my age. And it's really frustrating. And so in my effort to be transparent right now with my own experience, the only thing I ask is if you're watching this and you are identifying with some of the things I'm saying as a boomer or someone who's older and has kids my age, like all I ask is that you listen with an open heart. That's all I ask. Open mind. Because this is a reality for a lot of people my age. And I was at my grandma's all the time. I had a really close relationship with my grandparents. I feel like they kind of raised me. I remember like my memories of a child were at my grandma's house, like eating ravioli and nacho cheese Doritos, watching the Newsles. Like that's what I did every day. I was at my grandma's baking bread with her. Like that was my childhood because both my parents worked. But like what's interesting is we were so enmeshed. Josh was too. We were so enmeshed in our grandparents' lives. And now it's like, we were just kind of haphazardly like, yeah, when are you having kids? So we have these kids and now we don't have any help. Like we have no village helping us at all. Not like none, no support. It's odd. And this is something That is real. I see it all the time. I talk to people day in, day out with who have this exact same experience. And like, I just don't understand. Like, I was always at my grandma's house. Like, I had kids and like my parents just like disappeared. Like, that's weird to me. And it's not only upsetting from like the perspective of feeling just kind of like you're sent out to sea and then you're like just supposed to fend for yourself when you had all this help. But now we're also, I feel like, breaking down so much generational trauma on our own that it's really taxing, because doing the work on yourself and fixing yourself in therapy is so fucking exhausting that I literally even times will just take breaks from it. I'm like, I can't do it anymore. Like, right now I'm not going to my therapy because I'm just like, I'm tired. And having to now gentle parent our kids when that is not the way I was parented. It's not the way a lot of us were parented. And so I don't know. It's really weird to think about like just how I don't want to discount struggles that I may not know about, but if I'm looking at it from like a black and white perspective, like even I think of like the 90s and the 80s as like the I mean, that was like, things were great. Like, I loved the 90s. Like, you didn't have like existential doom looming around the corner every day that you woke up. You also weren't constantly being inundated on a little device every day of everything that's happening around the world that is so awful and so terrible. You weren't apprised of this information. We didn't have it. Like, it wasn't available. We only like sat down and watched the news. And that's how we found out what was going on in the world, which was like this much that we were getting compared to now, which like we literally have access to everything that's going on all the time. And if something breaking happens, we know about it. Like, the second it happens, we are alerted. This just happened. Mass shooting here. And so I feel like not only was everything just so much like calmer back then, and it was just like, I mean, let's be real, like the economy was amazing. The economy was not amazing for our grandparents, but it was for our parents. It's like they got the best of the best. And they didn't really have to worry about gentle parenting. Like, they just were like, go to your room. I don't need to tell you why. Like, it's because I said so. Like, if you were crying, you were sent to your room. Like, there was no, I'm going to really work on my trauma. I'm going to really work on the way I talk to my kids, and I want to make them feel heard and I want to make them feel seen. There wasn't any of that like there is now. So with us, I feel like the struggle, and even, you know, again, just for me, has been stepping into a role as a parent and a mother, really not knowing how hard it was going to be at all. And I'm talking about like, if you have no mental health issues at all, being a mother is so hard. No one prepares you for it. Like, I would say like a normal functioning woman would be like, oh my God, it's so overwhelming. It changed my whole life. I have no idea. Like, no one told me how hard it was going to be. But it has been so challenging just having to really watch myself and watch my rage and watch my reaction. I used to be so reactionary at everything. Like, everything was the end of the world. Every little thing would send Caroline into like a complete and utter panic attack. And when I had kids, I immediately was like, I don't want them growing up that way. I don't want them having the childhood that I had. I don't want them walking on eggshells around me all the time, wondering like, when is mom going to blow a gasket? Like, I don't want that. So in order to like, okay, I don't want that. Oh, well, now I have to like watch myself and like work on myself, because you can put a lid on it for a while, but like it's going to eventually boil over unless you start like actually diving into like, okay. And again, like doing this stupid fucking work in therapy, but then it spills over once you start doing that. And I just know the one thing I'm sure of with being a mom is like, that's my one for certain thing is like, I don't want my kids to feel the way that I felt. I want them to know that they can have their feelings, they can have their emotions, they can cry. I want to always be, have them know that they have someone that's going to listen to them no matter what. No, I don't care what it is about. I think it's because I spent a lot of my life not being taken seriously. No one, I don't want to say no one because that discounts people who have been there for me. Like, I, you know, my husband and my sister are like my ride or dies. Like, they have literally been the pillars that have held me together over the years. And I don't want to discount that. But overall, like, I was just kind of made to deal with shit on my own. And I think a lot of us were. And so we look now very differently at things and we're like, we had to just do it. Like, I had to go to my room and figure it out on my own. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? And that's been so hard. And again, I feel like no one talks about this. And it's making me uncomfortable talking about it because this is the first time I've really gone into depth about like my childhood and stuff. But I mean, at some point I have to start talking about it because I talk about everything on this podcast. And like, this is a huge part of the way I function and the way I am in the world today. And it affects everything. It affects my marriage. It affects, I mean, the way I grew up being taken to the Baptist church, that affected my life. It affected my marriage when I was in my early 20s. Like, don't do this, don't lust, don't think about sex, don't do this. But then you're just supposed to like get married and everything fucking magically changes. I don't think so. Like, maybe in your eyes, the way that you're like preaching this, it should change, but like not for the women who have been brainwashed for years of thinking, don't you dare think about sex. Don't you dare lust after this. If you do, like, you're going to just burn for all eternity. It's just, it's crazy. And then like, a switch is just supposed to flip when you get married and you're supposed to just do whatever for your husband. It doesn't work like that. And I think that that's where a lot of women struggle, specifically women who maybe have religious trauma as well. And I don't know where I was going with this. I need to look at my notes. Okay. I wrote down the disconnect we feel after becoming mothers, which to me is like a combination of misinformation and a lack of information pertaining to hormonal imbalances. Because again, we don't talk about what getting pregnant and going through childbirth and then having a child and a newborn does to like your psyche and your hormones. Like, it sends everything into overdrive and out of whack, and you don't feel like yourself, but you're supposed to be so grateful and happy the whole time. And you're not supposed to complain. That's another thing I was taught growing up. Like, don't you ever complain. Someone has it worse than you. And I mean, when I was taught, I'm in the church, basically, like, that was just one of the things. Like, you're supposed to be grateful at all times. And so then, like, we were programmed, like, okay, but I shouldn't be feeling this way. I am feeling this way, but I shouldn't feel this way because other people have it way worse than me. So then all we do as women, I feel like my whole life, I've just been spending every waking moment second guessing my feelings, second guessing what I'm doing with my kids or whatever. And then consistently in a cycle of just shame and guilt, doing this, but I really should be doing that. And it's a really hard and exhausting way to live, which I'll get to this towards the end, but I feel like it's kind of been a little bit of why I've just completely like almost flipped in the other direction recently. Because I feel like you can only, like we say, humans can only take so much. I feel like a lot of us right now are hanging on by a thread ultimately, with like the gun violence in this country. I think a lot of women are just, like at our wit's end, and not even just like parents, but like people, like we're all kind of like, I mean, you shouldn't be scared to go to the grocery store. You shouldn't be scared to go to a movie theater. I will not go to a movie theater anymore. That used to be something I did all the time. I will not go to a movie theater anymore during the day by myself. Won't happen. And that's alarming. That should alarm. Like, the desensitization that we now have with gun violence is alarming, and it should alarm everybody. And it just is what it is. I hate to even say that, but it is. Like, Like, it's so normal that, like, you will see a news story about it, a mass shooting, and you just, like, scroll right past it. It's just, it's weird. Because, you know, and I want to kind of bring it back. This mental load that we have as women running through the back of our minds all the time is so tiring and exhausting. And I'm talking about sex. I'm talking about our marriage. I'm talking about our jobs now that we're entrepreneurs, but we're also supposed to be stay-at-home moms. I feel like we're in that pocket of our moms kind of were working. Some of them were, but not like running businesses. Like, they were just working. They were going to like a 9-to-5. They weren't worried about marketing themselves and like branding themselves and running their own business while also now having a lot of people are homeschooling their kids because of the gun violence. And it's like, there's so much pressure that is just always right here for all of us. And no one's talking about it. Like, no one's talking about all the things that like are just simmering. Like, oh, am I doing this? Am I taking care of my husband? Am I taking care of myself? I'm supposed to also self-care now. Like, haha, when am I going to fit in self-care? That's hilarious. Are my kids doing okay in school? Are they doing certain sports that you're having to like usher them to and from sports stuff? We don't do that because we have a farm. So that's like our version of sports. But Kyler does like sports when he's in school. He does one because we're not going to tell him he's not going to do sports. But it's like, we have all this stuff. And you like, I feel like there's never time for us to just like be or express discomfort or express that we're stressed. And like all the while, these things are just bobbing along the surface, like that we have to continue taking care of. And I'm talking like the remedial fucking shit, like laundry, groceries, everyday dinners. What are you doing for dinner? Oh, I have to get this. Oh, I forgot. That's on the list. Oh, so like, it's just like this mental load is unsustainable. The mental load is unsustainable. We can't keep moving forward like this. Like, something has to give. And, you know, I incorporate this into my coaching now because you can burn the candle at both ends for so long, but it's eventually going to burn out. You're going to need a break and your body will demand a break. Been there, done that. Like, you can try to force through it. It won't work. But number one, I think the most important thing is to talk about it like this, like talk about all of these things because they're all fucking normal and we're all going through it and no one wants to talk about it. Everyone just wants to get on Instagram and act like their fucking lives are the same that they were back in 2019 before COVID hit. And that's just fucking bullshit. Like, I don't know. I view things so incredibly differently now that I cannot unlearn it and I can't go back. Like, I can't go back to the way I thought 3 years ago. And I get into arguments to this day with Josh about this thing because I will get like, if I hear about a mass shooting at a school, I'm like, oh my God, do I need to, I need to homeschool my, like, my first instinct is to keep my kids home from school. That is my first instinct as a mother. And then he thinks I'm nuts. He's like, Caroline, statistically, statistics are so low. Like, if you, and he's one of those people that will be like, well, I've looked up how many public schools are in the United States, and this is how many shootings we've had. And statistically, it's like a 0.01 chance. I'm like, that's fucking great. But the fact that it's still fucking going on. And like, every time one happens, it is like PTSD all over again. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't let them go to school. I can't let them go anywhere. They can't go on a plane. They can't go visit anyone. And then you, all of a sudden, on top of all of the shit that we are already thinking about and doing, you have like this additional massive like boat of a stress that is like crushing you and you don't know what to do because you can't fix it. And no one in this country gives two shits about fixing it. That's been made very clear. They're not going to fix it. So then you just feel hopeless. Like, I'm literally talking about, I want to move out of the country. I'm not going to get off on this, by the way, but this is where the stress over the past 2 years has led me. And it is, maybe I'm the only one going through this, but I know I'm not. It brings me back to having this anger towards our parents' generation of like, you never had to worry about sending your kids to school. And it makes me so mad. Like, hearing a comment of like, oh yeah, like, oh yeah, it was just so hard. I'm like, no, it really wasn't. You got to like take your kids to school every day and send them to school. And then daycare, we went to daycare before and after school. So we were like daycare, school, then daycare, like all day. And you never had to worry about us getting gunned down by a fucking assault rifle. Not once. I was in 12th grade when Columbine happened. So I was damn near out of school. So there was never that worry all the time. I'm talking daily. When I drop my kids off at school, every day I worry. Every day. And I know I'm not alone. So you have that on top of everything else. Then you're just supposed to what? Function throughout the day and act like everything's fine? It doesn't work like that. It's a constantly looming in the back of your head. Like if Kyler calls me during the day, like when he's at school, I literally like my heart sinks until I pick up the phone and find out that he's like, oh, hey, I just need money on my lunch account. I'm like, oh, thank God. But it's like our teachers should not have to go through this. Our children should not have to go through this. It's unacceptable. And I feel like you're backing a very scared, nervous animal into a corner. We're talking about women. That's what I feel like. And now, like, just with our rights being stripped away, like, it's just, it's honestly a joke to me at this point. And that's what I feel is, like, looming. Like, you have an animal that is terrified, and you are just slowly backing it into a fucking corner where it has nowhere to go. Like, what do you think is going to happen? And just, it's really wild to me to look back and be like, God, I spent my whole first part of my life literally so consumed with what my goddamn body looked like that I didn't even really, like a lot of the times I wasn't even really living my life because I was so worried about what my body looked like. That's all I cared about because that's all I should care because that's all my friends cared about. Like some of my friends had eating disorders. Some of my friends just didn't eat at all and starved themselves. And some of my friends had bulimia. And it's like, that was the norm growing up for me, for us. And now we're just like out to sea and raising our kids. And I'm really thankful that I don't really, I think a lot of the body image stuff is falling to the wayside. I think I feel it culturally kind of naturally happening, which makes me very happy. And I'm honestly happy to be a part of that movement. I will continue to be part of the movement that encourages women to stop fucking obsessing about your body and live your fucking life. Like, it's not worth it to spend every waking moment concerned about what your body looks like. Now, I understand it's not a thing that you can just like magically change. Like, I'm just sitting here saying it and you're like, oh, great. Thanks, Caroline. Like, I'm cured. I get that. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of work. But the way you do it, like, is the way that you would do anything else. Like I said before, regarding the shame, you just slowly chip away. You slowly chip away. You wear the shorts to the fucking gym and you get a thought that you don't like the way you look in the mirror and you say, I don't care. And you just keep moving. And eventually that just becomes like the way that you live and you stop caring. It just becomes what you don't give shit anymore. And then you can live your life, like eat the food you love. And like, you can still love, like whatever, your body. And I think at the end of the day, I've just gotten to a point here very recently where I'm like, fuck it. Like, I'm just tired of judging everything I do. I'm tired of dissecting the way I live my life. I'm tired of worrying about if the first thing I do when I wake up is check my phone. Who fucking cares? I used to be someone, and this is my OCD. We'll go into a tiny little snippet here with, I used to be the type of person that would be like, oh my God, I can only feed my kid organic. Like when Kyler was a baby, I was literally buying like organic vegetables and like pureeing them and freezing it. And like, I was like, he'll never eat processed foods. And like, I could very easily put myself into a category of like, if I tried a diet, I was like all in. Like, I remember going to the store and buying like rice flour and like everything organic. And it tasted like I was eating a fucking shoe and it was so gross. But I was like, I have to live like this. I can't buy basic all-purpose flour. I can't buy refined sugar. I have to buy the monk fruit and all this stupid fucking bullshit. And I would like put myself into that life for like a little bit and try to live it. And then I would fail miserably because that's just not me. It was disgusting. Like, it's just not who I am and it's not who a lot of people are. And then I would like crack open a bag of Doritos and start just housing Doritos like at the speed of light. And that's when I felt truly the happiest. I'm not going to lie. Like being me and like eating the foods I love and not trying to force myself to be organic Annie on TikTok who like doesn't use fucking granulated white sugar. And it took years of fighting with myself of like, this is what I should do. I feel like I used to be very impressionable. And my sister has told me this long time ago. I did used to be very impressionable. So like if I was like thinking something and then one of my friends was like, but what about this? I would like attach to that and be like, oh my gosh, you're right. Like diets. I would like attach to a diet and be like, I have to do this. Okay. I have to get all my stuff. I'm going to do keto. I'm going to commit. I have to know everything there is to know about keto. And it would drive me fucking crazy. And I never stuck to it. And that's like literally what I preach all the time with my, like, you don't even stick to diets. Like if you're like me, like you would plan it for years and then you would like try it and then you would do it for like a week and be like, this sucks. I don't want to do it. I would never even really do it. I would know everything about it and how to do it, but I wouldn't do it. So if you're not going to do it and commit, like what's the point? Just like live, eat what you want and live. And oh my God, my back. It's God damn it. I had fucking postpartum depression on here. I wanted to talk about that. I'm getting so off track. Mother, I do this all the time. Maybe I'm not off track. I was talking about my OCD. I was talking about how, like, I just don't care anymore. And maybe that's bad. Maybe it's good. But, like, the past few years have changed the way that I think about everything. And I'm going to say, I feel like for me, it's been mostly positive because I've let a lot of shit go that I used to obsess about and think that I needed to maintain like a level of give a shit. Now, like the bar is so low, but I feel like I'm going to quote George Costanza. If you have no hope, like you can't be, you can't be, I promise this is not like a depressive episode either. Like I'm being dead serious. That has been one of my favorite George Costanza quotes my whole life. That scene where he's like, I just want to be hopeless. Like if you have no hope, what is it? If you have no hope, like nothing can upset you. Like it's like the expectations, like expect nothing, appreciate everything. Like if you aren't having an expectation of something, you cannot be let down. I don't know. I've always liked that. I wrote down my motto is who cares? The no judgment has now swung me in the other direction, which is fine. Mom guilt is bad enough, but these days we are not even allowed to have it because of the risks that we live in with our society regarding gun violence, child trafficking, all of that stuff. And that was just one other thing. I'm going to put the little cherry on top here when I'm saying that yes, we have it a gajillion times harder than our parents had it because we don't even have the luxury to get angry with our kids like they did all the time and like spout off and like say things like send them, like, you know what I mean? Like we can't even get angry because, and again, this is me, like you are constant, like the thought in my brain, if I start to like get mad or like get upset that they're doing something, I'm like, oh my God, but what if like, within what world we live in now, like, I don't even feel like I can get mad at them. I don't want to ever leave without telling them I love them. And that's good. But at the same time, like, how fucked is that? Like, we don't even have the luxury to like get upset because we know immediately we will feel that guilt of like, oh my God, something terrible could happen. And it's way more of a reality now than it was back then. Let's be fucking real. So I just feel like we're stripped of all of the things that like our parents got to have and like use, I guess, to cope or whatever. And like, we just don't, we don't have those luxuries and it's a million times harder, nor do we have the help. We don't have people in our corner being like, oh yeah, just bring them by. We'll watch them for a couple days. It's just doesn't work like that. So we're just over here like drowning basically. And then I did want to talk about the postpartum depression, because Ashley basically was saying like, you know, we're supposed to only show gratitude for everything and we're not supposed to complain. which basically shuts us down from feeling the way that we actually feel, which is not good, because those feelings will like fester and fester until they like demand to be felt, and they will probably show up at the worst time. And I think, you know, it's this idea that this is the way things are and you should be okay with it. And in all reality, I feel like specifically mothers have never really felt more alone than they do now. And it's a combination of things. It's a combination of COVID. Now that there's like, I know a lot of people who are choosing to homeschool their kids, not only just because of COVID, but because of the gun violence. So they don't feel safe sending their kids to school. Totally understand that. But now, like, you have women who are now working full-time, maybe running their own business, also being a teacher to their kids, but you're also still in that homemaker role. Like, and when I said before that we're sandwiched, packed into this weird mid, like, we're the generation that's doing everything. Like, okay, but we grew up still kind of expecting to be like the homemaker and do all that stuff that like our grandmas did. But now we're supposed to also be entrepreneurs and own and run our own businesses, or have a full-time job and contribute financially to the home. Whereas that was not the case years ago. Now we're also supposed to be like the main mental load carriers for like, and I'm not saying across the board, but like most moms are like the mental load carriers. We're the ones worrying about the dentist appointments and scheduling them. We're the ones that like, you know, they get up in the middle of the night and they have a headache and they want like Tylenol. Like, what's the dose? Like, you have to know the dose. You have to get up and get the right medicine and you know how much they should have. Like, it's like stuff like that. Like laundry, making sure the laundry is like constantly going, making sure the dishes are constantly going, making sure the trash is constantly getting taken out. It's like these things that just don't stop. Like these things all have to be done all the time for like a household to be run. That typically falls on the woman. Not in all cases. I'm not discounting the men that do that. But all of this going on, just maintaining a home and then now also being concerned about being financially contributing to the family, raising kids with essentially no fucking help. And if you do want help, you have to pay $3,000 a month for childcare. Oh, by the way, if your kids do go to public school, now you have, I mean, public or private, I guess, like now you have to worry about them like literally getting shot while they're at school. And no one will do anything about it. Good luck with that. It's really scary. And then ad nauseum, we're supposed to be worried about our bodies and what we look like and be the perfect wife and be sexy and feel confident, when in all reality, a lot of women are hanging on by a thread. But, and I want to end with like, now we have this nauseating additional like expectation that we need to be doing self-care for ourselves. I feel like this I started talking about this a couple years ago and trying to incorporate it in my business, and it got so fucking toxic so fast that I was like, gross. Like I talk about self-care differently. I think it's so weird now that it's like almost become a job. Like, well, you know that phone, like screen time is so bad for your kids. Fuck that. I got it. I feel like I'm drowning. So like me worrying about how much screen time my kid gets, I just don't give a fuck. I don't care. I'm not saying like there are days where they're on it a lot and then there's days where they're not and we're out here working with the animals. Like I just don't, like I'm done fucking judging every goddamn move I make. And maybe if you take anything from this episode, it will be to just fucking stop judging yourself for everything that you do or everything that you don't do. Like, none of us are perfect parents. Like, we all fuck up. You don't have to, like, implement on top of everything else that you're already doing. You don't have to implement, like, a fucking perfect self-care routine and, like, wake up early and be fucking grateful for everything that you have and like meditate and like, it's nauseating. I am more along the lines of what makes you happy? What makes you feel good? What is something that like, if the thought of doing it popped into your brain, you would like genuinely get excited. And some of my clients will say, I love taking a drive in my car and blasting music by myself and singing. So I'm like, okay, that's going to be your form of whatever. So I fucking even hate the word. It's like cheat meal. I hate those words. I hate the word self-care and I hate the word cheat meal. Doing something for you. Like, again, we're boxing in. We're boxing in that self-care is taking a warm bath and waking up early to be show gratitude for our life, not getting on our phone first thing. That is so bad for you. I get on my phone the first thing every morning. That's like the first, I reach for my phone, I turn my alarm off, and I dick around and look at my Instagram messages, and then I get up. Sometimes I lay in bed and dick around on my phone for like 20 minutes. And I used to judge myself for that, and now I fucking don't. And you shouldn't either. Like, just exist. Just live. At this point, that is honestly my best advice. Like, stop fucking judging yourself. Stop fucking shaming yourself. If you want to let your kids play games for 4 hours while you disassociate on your couch and watch television while simultaneously dicking around on your phone and eating a bag of chips, like, go for it. But don't shame yourself for it. Like, how ridiculous to sit there and like feel shameful for doing those things. Just be like, this is what I'm doing today and it feels really good. I feel like a lot of us are exiting that like hustle culture mentality of like, we should be doing this, we should be doing this, we should be doing this. Well, if you aren't, you're not going to be here. And like, I'm at the point now where I'm like, I don't care. I've lost all capacity to give a fuck about like hustling so hard because it's going to do this and this and this and this and this. I'm like, no, I don't want that to come off like, I want nothing more than for my business to grow and to help more people. But I'm not in that mentality anymore to like rush it along and like be hiring marketing companies and like spending all this money on ads. Like, I just want to like, I don't know. I guess I'm just like entering a phase where I just want it to like organically keep happening. And I mean, I know at some point I've like hit my max because everybody knows what I do, but like I'm hiring more coaches and they're talking about it with their following and hopefully it will just continue to spread everywhere. I don't know. I've just taken a lot of pressure off of myself over the past few years and my life feels exponentially better because of that. And one of the camels just dropped their feed bucket on the ground. Anyway, I guess that was really all I wanted to say. I think I touched on everything. I think I did. Yeah, I'll end it by just number one, acknowledging the amount of pressure that specifically women are under these days. Don't discount it. Find, if you feel like you are drowning and you're on the verge of a nervous breakdown, find something that you cannot do. Like if it's like an appointment that you need to push for another month, or if it's a scheduling thing that like you just don't want to do, like put it off, like cancel it and reschedule it. Whatever that thing is that you can do to gain just a little sense of normalcy for even an hour, do that thing. I have found the last two instances where I felt like I was going to have a full-on panic attack, nervous breakdown, that if I just separate myself from that like feeling or even like the scenario, like one day I had to go to the grocery store. I just have to like get away for like an hour. And I drove to the grocery store and I went to UPS and I came back like a completely different person. And it was right after we got the puppies. And it was so like that first week of having puppies is like having two newborns. It was very stressful. And I came home this was the day after we lost Amelia, which was so traumatizing and shocking, and it happened out of nowhere. And I was like trying to process her, the loss of her. And I walked in the door and Bear like was limping. And he, for those of you who don't know, he tore his left ACL, or it was like a partial tear. And the vet was like, he's more likely to tear the right now because he's compensating for his left. So like, watch him. Don't let him run. If you know Bear, like, that's fucking hilarious. He's a psychopath. So he runs up and down the stairs and like, I don't know what he was doing, but I came home and he was not putting any pressure on his right foot. And I was like, why is he fucking limping? And I'm telling you, like, it was like, we got the puppies, Amelia fucking died. And then I came home and saw Bear limping and I was like, uh-uh. I'm gonna lose it. And I was so keyed up. I was like, I need to just get out of this house. So I left, went grocery shopping. I was audioing Dana and just talking to her about it. And I went to the UPS store. I came back and I got a cookie cake at Reese's. Cause I mean, I was just in one. I was like, fuck it. I'm gonna get a cookie cake for Josh. I don't even really like it, but that's like his favorite thing. So I got one and it said, congratulations. Cause it was right around the time of like school ending. And I came home and put it on the chair. And he's like, what's this? And I was like, what does it look like? It's a cookie cake. And he was like, why does it say congratulations? I was like, congratulations, you're married to me. And he fucking started dying laughing. He's like, that's the funniest thing you've ever said. He's like, you were in a completely different mood than you were an hour ago. And I'm like, I just needed to like exit the scenario for like, it was weird. And I'm starting to now notice that like when I get like in like where I feel like I'm gonna spontaneously combust, if I can just remove myself from a situation or like think about something else for like 20 minutes, it completely takes me out of that state. And maybe this is something most people know to do. I just have never done it or practiced it until now. And it's been really helping. So, yeah, I think that's it. I think that's everything. If you guys have questions about anything, please let me know. Hopefully I touched on everything. Hopefully I didn't. Why am I so concerned about pissing people off? This is a millennial thing. Why am I so scared of pissing people off and like upsetting someone? It's like ingrained into my entire being and I hate it. I'm trying to get better about it. I've gotten a lot better about it. I think that's it though. Okay, I'm going to stop and I will see you guys in the next episode. If you want to reach out to me and share a story with me, maybe something that resonated with you as I was talking about it that you have also gone through or experienced, I would love to hear about it. Shoot me a message on Instagram or comment below below the show notes on this video if you're watching the video, and I will see you guys in the next episode. I will be filming with Tana again. We're doing a part two because we had so many fucking people asking about the semaglutide Ozempic, which I'm starting mine in like 2 weeks, and I will be sharing my full journey. I'm not doing it for weight loss. I'm doing it because it's supposed to help with addictive behaviors. So that is why I am doing it, because I hope it helps with my OCD and I hope it helps with my addictive behaviors. So Tana basically is starting me at a very, very, very low dose because she was like, since we're not doing yours for weight loss, like you don't need, like we're starting you at like a baby dose. We want to see if this can help with some of your neurological stuff. So I will keep you guys posted on all of everything with it. I will be talking very openly about my experience with it as I do everything else. And if you are someone who had questions for Tana, let me know and I'll pass it along to her, and maybe we'll talk about it in the next episode, but we are filming here in a few weeks for part two. So if you have questions about that, we are all ears. We want the questions. So that's it. I will see you guys in the next episode, and I hope you're having a great, well, this will air Friday, so a great Friday and a great weekend.
Thank you for checking out the CWC podcast. If you want to learn more about our community, make sure to check out the show notes.